The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
This is Sam Witwer, and you are listening to Nerdy Show.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Brandon.
Hi, I'm Colin.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And hey, these podcasts, they're not so weekly, because we're getting four podcasts in 1 week. This is part of our daily podcast series covering all the days of E3. Yesterday was day zero, where we covered the media conferences. Today is the first day on the floor of E3, and also the day of Nintendo's direct presentation.
And they killed it.
By some accounts, they may have killed themselves.
But it's up to interpretation what killed it means at this point.
That's personally not something I agree with. I think it was a decent showing of first-party material, but it raises some interesting questions, and they might have some interesting answers. But something that's, I think, become very clear this year especially is that after last year, when Nintendo stopped doing formal press conferences and started doing Nintendo Direct presentations streaming on the regular, their media conference doesn't mean the same thing it did. They'll announce a lot of big stuff for E3, but they announce so much stuff regularly throughout the year directly to the people. They don't care about presenting things for the press, really. They just want to put on...
And you know, good for them.
Yeah.
Good for
them. They're doing their own thing. I think they've recognized that they are not playing in the same arena as Microsoft and Sony, and so they're trying, maybe desperately, depending on how you view it, to do something different.
Right, and that was evidenced by some of the stuff they had. They had Robot Chicken open up the
yeah, Robot
oh,
Chicken
man,
did
the,
some
okay,
stuff.
Okay, the video. Fight scene at the beginning was amazing.
Yeah,
there was a fight scene, live action fight scene between Reggie Fils-Aimé and Iwata.
Yeah, best, that was fun.
Best thing of the of
that was really cool. And plus it was a very clear, like, they know they're very self aware in that there was a reviewer in the front row who was like, "Where's Mother 3?"
Yeah,
no. And Reggie killed him, and you're like, yeah. Really? That's your fucking
response? Where's Star Fox?
And they killed him, too.
As an Earthbound fan, I took issue with that Mother 3 thing. It's like, okay, so, no, we're really passionate fans devoted to a series that's really great storytelling, and we respect Nintendo for it. So when we ask you why you haven't imported a game over here that we think would be, you know, really important to the gaming community, you set us on fire and portray us as a fat bastard in a I really resented that. Honestly.
I thought that it was I think that they were just poking fun at
everything that the Earthbound community has gone through, that seemed extremely disrespectful.
You know, Robot,
and I don't think I'm being
okay. The writers of Robot Chicken might have actually done it themselves.
But on the other hand, I'm also glad, despite how negative I feel it may have been,
they're aware
that there was, like, that Mother 3 actually got a name drop in a world where Ness still hasn't been announced for Smash Brothers. Now, I think he's got to be in it, but you know, I just want a constant flow of Earthbound from Nintendo.
You can play your Mii now, though, in Smash Brothers.
Yeah?
That's what I want. I want Blowjobula in Smash Brothers.
Yeah, that was...
For context, Blowjobula is a Mii whose face looks like a penis with hairy balls.
Yeah.
Best thing we've ever seen on a Mii.
That is actually what I'm really excited about, is that the Miis themselves, and that was actually why they were showing off Iwata and Reggie Fils-Aimé like fighting each other, was that you can now fight with Miis in Smash Brothers, but I'm not necessarily excited about fighting with my Colin me. I'm excited about fighting with my Blowjobulas or my Abraham Lincolns
all the Kim Jong-uns out there in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
On Time.com, earlier this morning, they leaked a Star Fox announcement.
They said it's been confirmed, and then we watch the conference, and they say nothing. And, like, Miyamoto's playing Star Fox, and it's like, oh, we have nothing new. And then it ends, and you're like, what the fuck? I know that was Star Fox.
Yeah.
And then later on in the day, we heard, I guess, they confirmed it.
Yeah, they did confirm it. Apparently, there was a very exclusive press event yesterday or something, behind closed doors, and the reason they didn't show off Star Fox more is because it's in an early development stage, and it's apparently done in such a way so that they couldn't showcase it on the E3 floor because it takes some getting used to. It involves managing two screens, really using the Wii U controller in a different way, like managing basically, I think what they're saying is the perspective of the R-Wing and the panels of the, you know, of the map and stuff going between the two, flying with motion controls on the controller, and it sounds actually kind of complicated. And Miyamoto said, yeah, it is complicated. It actually takes maybe 30 minutes of getting used to. Once you get it, it's amazing, and I stand behind it.
And
but
did they say it's not, like, a full game? They're releasing it in series?
He discussed that. He didn't say much about it, but he said that whereas if you look at the previous Star Fox games as though they were movies, this one will be more like a TV series where you, like, get new episodes and sort of constantly expanding and continuing.
But why? I like the other games. They were good. They worked for me. I just want a full Star Fox game.
This one might be reimagined from the ground up. It might not even be the same continuity.
I guess. And so they announced a new thing. What, Amiibas?
Yeah.
Amiibas for your Wii.
I don't know why they're called Amiibos. I mean, like, at least Wii and Wii U, they had some kind of an explanation for it. They didn't even try this time. They're basically the Skylanders or Disney Infinity figurines. If you noticed on the Wii remote, Wii U remote, you know, thing, there's this little there's this little rectangle underneath the D-pad on the left hand side. I've wondered what it was, and it's actually some kind of a reader for these like Disney Infinity Skylanders like things. The Nintendo version is called the Amiibo. And
they looked gorgeous when we saw the prototypes.
They were in a display case, these prototypes. The first thing that's going to be used with them, maybe the first thing, I don't know. They're going to start coming out this year. Smash Brothers, first and foremost, you're going to be able to like tag characters in and out using these Amiibos. And you were talking about, like, if you ever wanted gorgeous Nintendo figurines, regardless of whether or not you even use them to play your games, holy shit.
Well, now, okay, it said prototypes, and they're subject to change, so
of course, they may have just made
super good ones just for the display at E3. We don't
but
know.
Like,
but if they stay at that quality, I would buy them just to have them.
Mario's holding a fireball, and the fireball is transparent, but Mario's opaque. There's lots of amazing texturing. The level of detail is incredible. Lots of the prototypes had a balance between, like Star Fox, he's matte. Most of him is, like matte finish on the paints, except for, like, the equipment on his belt, which has metallic paint. Samus is done entirely in metallic paint with her armor. It's extremely cool.
And they say it works with Mario Kart 8, so if you have been playing Mario Kart 8 and you're like, I want a new feature, well, they just added a new feature without you even knowing.
And also, the really interesting thing about it is that, you know, now you have this physical thing that can transfer between multiple games. Because they talked about how not only are you communicating to the Wii U is also communicating to the figurine.
Or it has, like, a storage drive in the figure.
Right, so, like, the stats that you're creating or saving or
whatever
we don't know. We don't know, like, the full extent of what can be saved onto the figurines, but in theory, if you're using that Mario on your Smash Brothers and it's learning techniques or whatever the hell it's doing, then you're using it on Mario Kart. Maybe something will...
And Mario Party.
Yeah, there might be some kind of interconnectivity or something might be special because you own those other games.
Yeah.
Who knows?
So what did I see that I actually cared about? Well, Yoshi's Woolly World.
That looked cool.
Amazing.
It looked really awesome.
It
looked beautiful.
I want to play it. Yoshi looks great. I'm a huge fan of Yoshi.
Kirby's Epic Yarn was a great game. I stand behind that game wholeheartedly. It was not... a challenging game.
This is like a step up.
But it wasn't intended to be a challenging game. It was a game to relax.
Yeah, kind of just chill out and experience.
Yeah. And I feel like that's what Yoshi's Woolly World is going to turn out to be.
Yeah, it looks perhaps more challenging, has more replay value likely based on like the level of secrets that they were showcasing.
Yeah.
And obviously it's an HD.
Yeah.
So it
there's a three-dimensionality to this that they could not do in Kirby's Epic Yarn. But it's also, you can do two-player co-op, and you can eat your partner and, you know,
that's the thing I hate most about Nintendo games. Every time I play multiplayer, I keep accidentally grabbing someone and throwing them off the stage, and then I fuck myself. So now it's like you can accidentally eat them. I'm going to be doing it constantly. Like, no, I didn't mean to do that, damn it.
You're going to eat somebody and then fuck yourself?
Yes. Nice. See, that's usually a good weekend for me is to eat someone and then fuck myself.
Well, if you're playing New Super Mario Brothers and you're playing four players, it's going to be chaotic. If you're playing two players, it might be cooperative. And right. I think that that's what Yoshi's Woolly World offers.
Yeah.
Another thing about the Amiibo technology, they mentioned that they will be bringing Skylanders and Disney Infinity to the Wii U, and they will also be using the same thing. They built this in from the beginning. I'm kind of befuddled by how this existed and no one mentioned anything about it.
That,
maybe I just wasn't paying attention.
I'm really impressed about that the most is that how secretive it was. They kept it for this long.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
Nobody knew about it.
That's true.
I mean, obviously some people did,
right?
But, you know.
And then one of the other games that they mentioned was Splatoon.
Yeah,
which is
a
weird
IP.
Thing, and I don't know how to feel about it, but it looks really fun.
We're gonna try to play it maybe tomorrow or Thursday, but it looked like a really interesting kind of just multiplayer madness where you basically each team has a different color paint, and you are battling for supremacy of paint.
You're painting all
of the surfaces over the in the arena, and you are trying to have the most paint.
Yeah.
In the arena.
And you move faster and your surface is slower than theirs and turn into squids.
Yeah, but it's also a mode of conveyance because you're a person and you're also some kind of a squid person. So you can swim in your color and you can jet through the level and do all these kind of abilities based on how much you've actually coded. It just seemed like a really fun, simple multiplayer.
Yeah.
I will say, it looked like a fun Xbox Live Arcade game.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a full
match. And it might be a download-only game. I don't know.
Yeah, there were...
They didn't say what or how you would
get
it.
There weren't too many details. I will say, like, if you know... It becomes different
bucks,
if,
okay.
If there's, like, create, you know, level creators, that's a different story. You know, then it becomes a much more fleshed-out game. But as it stands, it looks like a fun game that I wouldn't pay more than, like, $10
or $15.99
at
Nintendo's been creating actually a lot of great download exclusive games like NES Remix, so it's entirely possible. We'll have to find out. Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, like if you like the stuff from New Super Mario World,
if you like a Mario game you always wanted to play as a Toad.
Well, it's different.
As a mushroom person,
Treasure Tracker is kind of like an action puzzle game almost, like in that you like working around the three-dimensional environment. With the Toad's limited moveset and like being weak against enemies is part of the objective. Like it's an interesting.
I just like that. Like your character's worthless. Figure out how to solve this stage. You're not Mario. Get through the stage. Go.
I mean that is what it's about. That's kind of neat. Like they only had a handful of them in Mario 3D World, but when you got to the final one, it was actually quite challenging. And so this is a whole game of it. I think that was a good call. I really do.
So what else did they announce but not show anything of? Zelda?
Yeah, Zelda.
They showed that it's for the first time ever open world.
Yeah, that they
which is impressive.
They've given the Zelda franchise, as by all indications, a Skyrim-style scope.
As far as we know.
That's good. We were actually talking earlier in the day about how the thing that Zelda is lacking is a sense of scope. It feels extremely isolated, and for better or for worse, and this is something new.
And they did show a scene, but it's obviously pre-rendered and not really how the game's going to be played. But it looked good anyway.
It's a direction that the 3D Zeldas, I think, severely needed. Like, I think it needs a sense
as
of...
As soon as you make a game 3D, it has, like, people expect that openness. Like, Ocarina of Time, to me, was an open-world game, because I never played anything bigger since then.
Mm-hmm.
But then they kept it that size.
Yeah.
Forever. Yeah. And it's just like, no, guys, it's time to make something bigger than Skyrim.
Well, you were saving a world that was probably populated by monsters, like, 1,000 to 1. You know,
like,
the 30, population
there's
of,
30
of,
people.
Of, you know, humans.
There's
or,
literally,
or elves,
yeah.
Or, yeah.
There's, like, Hyrule has 10 citizens. half of them, you know, are in minigames.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Running
well,
shops.
I mean, we'll see if they deliver. It looked beautiful.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah,
as usual, like, the theme of the Wii games are that everything Nintendo makes looks really fucking pretty.
Yeah.
Well, on the flip side of that, Hyrule Warriors, I think, looks amazing. And I know if you're a big fan of Dynasty Warriors, obviously it's the same thing. Exactly the same, but with, you know, in the setting of Hyrule. And the reason that's amazing is because you've never, ever, ever seen massive armies in a Zelda series. And that's what it's missing. You know, if you have an open world or, like, a huge area where, like, you're saving the world from Ganon, what, with the two monsters he's got in his tower guarding him at the end? No, you want to see hordes and hordes of goblins and monsters. in Hyrule Warriors, which I think is a working title, is exactly...
I believe that it's confirmed title now, yeah.
It's exactly what I actually... I would like that combined with the new Zelda game. I want to see an army of like 1,000 goblins you're fighting.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
No, it looked pretty cool. It definitely looked pretty cool.
Like, if you're storming, you know, a castle, and they've got, you know, like, 4 enemies inside, it's like...
Yeah.
Wow, that's really a challenge, so...
So, a couple interesting quotes that happened during the show. Reggie looks at the screen and he says, never has there been a better time to play games on Nintendo. And shortly followed by, there's nothing wrong with having a little fun. And I think those are, you know, very transparently the message that Nintendo's trying to get across. It was all first party during this thing. There was really...
Well, there was Xenoblade.
Yeah. Okay. You're right. There were some partnerships. It was all very, very exclusive. These games. There was the new Xeno.
Because they don't have many third parties anymore.
The new Bayonetta game, which of course is Nintendo's invested in them or some kind of thing now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's a Sega made game, but I guess Nintendo. It's exclusive on Nintendo now.
Well,
I guess they would refer to it as a second party. You know, there's a lot of, you know, exclusive development for the Wii U.
Yeah, and I was actually, when we were walking to E3 from the parking lot, Spill, you brought up a really interesting point about Nintendo, about how they are now feeling about their own console.
Yeah, is that they want to be the second console in your home. They're not trying to win over Sony or Microsoft. Like, they realize at this point that their games aren't replacements for those. They are complements at this point. And my concern for Nintendo is that unlike the Wii U is at a price point that is more competitive with the PlayStation and Xbox, that not many people will be buying both. They might be choosing one or the other. And I find that I think there would be very few people that would argue that to choose one of those three, that, you know, how many people are going to choose Nintendo, I would tend to think there would be a lot more that choose Sony and Microsoft, as opposed to when they used to say, well, I'll get one, and then I'll buy my, you know, $200, $150 Wii and get Smash Brothers.
Well, I used to do that. I used, like, whatever Nintendo system comes out, I'm getting that, obviously. And then if, you know, Sony puts out something, I'll get it. Now it's like, I'm choosing one, and obviously I'm going with the one I like the most.
And I attested, like, the Wii U, it has everything I want in a video game system, because Nintendo is producing really fun games. But that's what's right for me right now. It's not a media center. I can watch YouTube on it, and better than any other system. The Netflix has some fun features, but whatever. Well, that's a discussion for another day. I like the Wii U an awful lot, but I guess it depends on how much money people have these days. Because I think it should be the second system in their home, because these games are stellar.
Well, I mean, if you're rich, by all means, like, get all three. You should own all three if you're rich.
You're gonna if you have a Wii at this point. There was a time where there were no games, but if you have a Wii U, there's a lot of reasons to be playing games on it right now. And there's only going to be more. And this, while this showing was a little bit like it was extremely Smash Brothers heavy. They banked entirely on Smash Brothers, which is cool. They had an invitational today at the Nokia Center. It looked really well attended. If it was an annual event, that would be really cool. Smash Brothers is a selling point, and we get Smash Brothers and Mario Kart, two fiercely competitive games everybody loves. Maybe this will be a turning point for them. I don't know.
I would say right now, both of those series, in their own odd way, are the best fighter and racer available right now, as far as series are concerned. Like, I know they're hard to compare to other fighters and other racers, but I think for a fun factor, it's hard to argue.
Mario Kart's the most fun racer.
Yeah, it's hard to argue otherwise. Those two are definitely, you know, probably the system seller series.
If you give me Gran Turismo or Mario Kart, I'm going to choose Mario Kart.
I think action-adventure-wise, I think Zelda has fallen off the map of being the, you know, the high, you know, the high mark of that genre. But, like, those two, the Kart and Smash Brothers series, they're still A1.
But with Zelda, they're broadening the scope, and they're probably going to, you know, keep the classic, like, puzzle-solving elements, which is something that's always been absent in games like Skyrim. So we could see something. We could see the rebirth of Zelda. It could happen. But I suppose what matters is if people are playing or not.
Yeah.
We haven't had any hands-on with Nintendo stuff yet. We hope to in the coming days. But that was the morning of announcements. Let's move on to the stuff we did see. We're going to have a number of videos coming up as we go throughout the week of some of these things. But we'll share our hands-on experiences with them. One thing we saw that we didn't do a video of, we just slipped in on a whim.
Sid Meier's... Civilization Beyond Earth?
Yeah, it's a new Civilization game in outer space. It's like StarCraft, but with politics. And, like, it's not all, like, fast-paced battle with some jackass.
Where you're like, oh, fuck, Zerg Rush, I don't know what the hell to do anymore. Yeah. Fuck my life.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which is every StarCraft game and, yes. and level for me.
Yeah, and I love StarCraft, but man, I can't keep up with these kids these days.
the strategy involved in this game and the different technologies you could choose to build is, you know, it's what you'd expect in a civilization game, except it's, you know, in space, and it's similar. It's basically, I like to call it the evolution of Alpha Centauri, which I thought was really good, but this looks so much better, so much more in depth.
Yeah, I mean, they had aspects of purity, harmony, and supremacy. And those three factions, like, that was how you determined between who was coexisting with the planet, who decided that they need to completely eradicate the planet's wildlife, and then put our own life,
genetically modify
it. Yeah,
it's not just about terraforming. It's about, like, adapting to human civilization moving to other planets in a more political way, which I thought was interesting. Something you barely see covered in sci-fi to begin with.
Yeah, no, it looked really interesting. It looked like, you know, classic Sid Meier Civilization.
I definitely want to buy it because I've been a fan of Civilization, especially since they went to space.
Yeah.
So I want more of that.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Looks really cool.
This fall, actually. It comes out this year, so yeah. You'll get to play it soon.
Check it out.
We spent some time with Disney Interactive. We saw the Marvel edition of Disney Infinity. And someone other than me finally got hands-on with Fantasia. We got videos for both those things coming out, but I guess we'll share our first, you know, feelings about it.
Let's talk about Disney Infinity.
Yeah. It's you know, like Skylanders and the Amiibos, it's little figurines that let you sort of play in this virtual sandbox of pop culture figurines interacting with each other. Now you can create situations where, you know, Black Widow can go party with, I don't know what Disney princesses are in, you know, but you know, like, drunk Tony Stark stumbles in on Cinderella.
Oh, man, I didn't even think of that.
Oh, man.
Throws up in her glass slipper.
So does that mean that, like, Princess Elsa from Frozen and,
she's
like...
in it.
And, like, could have, like, a relationship with Iceman later down the line?
I don't think there's relationships in the game.
I think we're thinking with adult mindsets.
But they had a
as
tiny...
As wonderful as that would be.
They did have a tiny Nick Fury, you know, Samuel Jackson version, which I thought was awesome. I got hands-on with the game, and I played as Spider-Man, which was really, really easy to play, and I beat up Venom, but then... Basically, I got into a hover car, or I got into a car, and it transformed into a hover car.
Yeah, a shield hover car, not necessarily Lola.
And the guy was trying to tell me, you know, you can use webs to go around the city, and I was like, I've got a flying fucking car. Spider-Man is driving around town in a flying car. So I'm doing missions and, like, flying in this car around town as Spider-Man. It was really cool, actually.
It seems like a lot of fun. If I was a little kid, I would be all over this. And we did ask about Star Wars. Yeah, you could see the glint in their eyes. It's motherfucking happening. Star Wars is coming to Disney Infinity in a couple years. They didn't say that.
He said, I can't say anything about that.
But I'm telling you. And you know what was funny? When I asked him about Willow, because of course I asked him about whether or not...
That was awesome.
Whether or not George Lucas's Willow is gonna make a statement. He actually kind of like... It was weird. He didn't... His reaction...
It wasn't like a, Willow, what the fuck are you talking about? He was like... No, I can't comment about Willow.
I was like, maybe there's something to comment on.
Guardians of the Galaxy or anything.
I want to see Mad Mardigan beat up Rocket Raccoon.
How would that even?
Well, they'd like each other. Mad Mardigan's a Peter Quill type.
Yeah.
But you can do another thing that was cool, which you can create your own world now. You can create your own areas. You can create your own, like, houses and interiors and buildings. And you upload them to the server, and I asked him, I was like, what if I have a bunch of buildings that look like dicks? He's like, well, that won't get approved. So if once we approve it, you know, no dick buildings. He literally said that, no dick buildings. Anyone can go into your worlds and see what you've done. So, like, you're going to have, like, thousands or millions, I don't know, worlds uploaded to the
server. They were actually talking about how there was a father-son team that was creating worlds for Disney Infinity. They were so good, they hired them.
Wow, that's cool.
And they don't even live anywhere near, like, Disney.
They moved for the job.
Wow,
I believe, unless I heard it wrong.
I think they paid for them to move. That's how good they were.
That's awesome.
Gravity Falls fans, You can add the Mystery Shack into your playsets now.
Just the Shack, though. Nothing
just
else.
The Shack, Dipper and Mabel, not that I saw. Mm-hmm. Also, Darkwing Duck accessories for us old school people. That was cool.
Wait, was Darkwing Duck actually in it?
I didn't see Darkwing Duck, but I did see the Rat Catcher and his gas gun. So.
How the fuck are you not going to put Darkwing Duck in it then, but have that?
I would assume he must be in it, but I didn't see him.
All right.
Anyway, moving on. You guys probably heard me talk about Fantasia last year. What'd you guys think about Fantasia?
It was fun.
It was a workout. You know, I saw you guys were having some trouble, and I had some trouble at the beginning.
Colin and I were playing two player.
I would say Brandon, as far as like getting a hold of rhythm, Brandon really picked up on it second half of the song. Like, I don't think you weren't struggling.
And I don't think I've ever heard that Peter Gabriel song that's 20 minutes long before.
It was in your eyes, and you've totally heard it.
and they don't have Daft Punk. I was upset because they said there's no Daft Punk in the game. So
right,
guys are like, but the Tron.
Yeah, but that's for now, and it's first of all, it's Harmonix and it's Disney, so they have a ton of catalogs to pull from. You know what? Honestly, the way that it felt like it was the fun of Rock Band without it necessarily being, you know, me playing an instrument. It had like that aspect of having a party, that aspect of being with music and watching and paying attention to that, to the rhythm aspect of Rock Band, although it was presented a completely different way, but it was a really interesting and fun experience to be able to do the Nutcracker with Cap.
You just had to choose that fucking song.
Many nuts were cracked.
From my passive observations of a bunch of, like, you guys playing, plus a couple other people, the developers, obviously, and also, like, just other demoers I saw around the internet, those that kind of naturally let themselves bob and get into the rhythm of the music as well as the visuals on screen, were doing much better than those that were just paying attention to visual, which I find to be completely different than most, like, rhythm games where it's like, the music tunes out and it's just like, fucking focus on the lights coming in and the colors and everything else, and, like, you kind of forget that you are, you know, trying to actually mimic the rhythm of something. This seemed to be much more natural. And
yeah,
and
when I stopped looking at the screen, like when the triangles line up and I'm just like going with the beat and just doing it, it worked a lot better, actually.
Yeah.
Two-player was challenging. Two-player was definitely more difficult than single-player. There was a learning curve there.
Well, it's also a matter of, you know, there was some of like the connect was kind of being connecty. You know,
it's like, stand back, sir.
Yeah, don't go this, or don't, you know, whatever. So, I mean, there's that aspect of it, but also at the same time, it was super fun to, like, just kind of swipe your hands all over the place and kind of go nuts, and everybody was laughing as we were flailing. It looked like we were, you know, just, we were having some sort of, like, some sort of physical psychotic episode, because we were just flailing all over the place.
There were bees, Colin.
There were lots of bees.
That's exactly what it looked like.
Yeah, so.
Bees!
Yeah. No, but it's going to be super fun. Have they announced when it's going to come out?
October.
Yeah, that's super fun.
Yeah.
It's a reason to buy the Kinect.
Yeah, but there's actually very few
reasons
games for Xbox that are truly defined by the hardware, more so than the ones that play with Kinect and do it well.
Well, it's a question of, you know, there's the Xbox One and whether you should purchase that. And yeah, sure, you should purchase the Xbox One if you're interested in the games that are coming out for the Xbox One. But to decide whether or not you also want to purchase the Kinect, because now they're no longer forcing you to purchase the Kinect and the Xbox One.
Oh man,
This is one of the reasons why you might want to consider purchasing the Kinect
The other reason, jumping ahead in time a little bit in our journey, but contextually, we played Shape Up, the fitness game for video gamers.
Yeah, so when you're watching the press conference for Xbox and you saw that crazy insanity game that was
push-ups with cartoon garbage stacked on your back.
That was the game that we played.
How was it? I didn't see you guys do that. I was doing something else.
It was very effective. We have a video interview with Nicola, the guy who did it, and it turns out you might have heard us. I think we mentioned it in yesterday's podcast that it reminded us of Your Shape Fitness Evolved, the probably best showcase of what the original Kinect was capable of, technically speaking, as far as body mapping and knowing where the bone structure of a human was and things like that. Well, it's the same guy. It's the exact same guy.
The same team. The same development team.
So this is like the next step up.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, basically.
They don't necessarily want to spread the word. I guess Your Shape Fitness Evolved didn't do so well in the marketplace, but this is the successor to that technology. And as we saw whether or not people bought it, it was worthy. It was extremely powerful technology.
I'm kind of sore from Fantasia. I was like sweating. That was a workout.
This was a significant workout, and it's and you know I was questioning I was questioning Nicola, and I asked him about it. Basically, what they're doing is they not only do they have these small little mini games in case you wanted to just jump in and play around a little bit and have fun with your fitness. There's also these things called quests, where you go on 15-minute long quests where they are using different muscle groups and cardio and all that kind of different stuff in order to have an actual workout.
Yeah, it isn't just physical novelty games that are more taxing than average. It is actually, despite, like, we were demoed a couple games here and there, but it is actually designed to be a workout. They suggest doing it at least 3 15-minute sessions a week, just
right.
Bare minimum.
Which you could do more if you wanted
to. And they've tracked weight loss and has succeeded.
Yeah.
Man, working out, they sold me on that game.
Yeah, no, it was super fun. I mean, it gamified working out. I mean, like, there was this one where it was just working on your core, where you had to sit down and lean back, but also kind of be
V
position.
You're actually leaning back right now, so you should probably lean forward.
Yeah, it was in that V position in order to fight off these alien monsters that were on the screen.
Yeah, so you're leaning back, your hands are forward, and your hands are basically effectively like a cannon for a laser beam.
Yeah, and you're activating your core in order to make that happen.
Core
and
activating!
And the game is like, lean further back if you're not doing it quite far enough. Yeah. So
does it go, lean back?
Yeah, it
lean
does.
Back.
Yeah.
It doesn't say it, but it... and also, all the games get harder the better you do.
Yeah.
Do you get harder the better you do?
Rock hard.
All right, because some people get off that way to workouts.
Well, Shape Up, yeah, but Shape Up is shaping up to be a good game.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Zing. While we're talking about Microsoft, Brandon, you had your own adventure in the Microsoft booth today.
Oh, man. So while they were doing that...
You found your calling.
At the same time, I found my way to the little Fable Legends booth, and I was like, I played the first Fable game, it was good, and then, you know, they played the second and third Fable games, not so great, maybe never want to play a Fable game again. But then I played this, and I waited in line to be one of the heroes. And by the way, I found out there's two other characters you didn't know about, unless you were there, or they announced them while we were at E3. One's called Leech, who's a doctor-looking guy with a plague mask who literally uses jars of leeches. or sucks enemies' life force and gives it to the team, because healing is kind of difficult in that
Because
game.
Fable's like Gauntlet Legends now.
Yeah, even though they said, that's just a coincidence. And then there's another guy named Shroud who turns invisible and uses a bow. He looked really cool, and I was like, I want to be Shroud. So when I got up in line, there's four heroes and one person plays the villain. They're like, we need someone to play the villain. And everyone's like, and I was like, oh, god damn it, I'll do it. I was like, I really want to be a hero, but I'll be the villain. So they take me up on stage, like, on another level, so I can look down at the other players. You know, because you want to be better than them.
Right.
And so he was trying to teach me the game real quick. I was like, just tell me everything real quick, and I'll get it down. And he, you know, talks to me, he's like, 60-second countdown, and he gives me the down low. And right off the bat, like... I get my guys to shoot arrows full of smoke at the gate. I have another guy's like throwing bombs, and I have this stealth fighter come in. I kill like three of them right off the bat, and then one comes up, and while my troops are rushing, he kind of heals some of them, and they get past my first wave. By the time they get like not even to the end of the stage, they get maybe halfway through the level, and I murder them. As soon as they come in through the third area, I just wipe them out. And the guy was really impressed, said I was in the top two he's seen all day. Which, you know, top two. It's pretty great. I found my calling. I kicked the shit out of it, and I would totally play that game as a villain. Because I didn't think it would be fun at all. I was like, oh, it's top down, and you just control these enemies, and they do things. Okay.
Because you're a disembodied force.
But
you're
just like, and I don't get to fight? What? But no, it is extremely fun. It was extremely, like, thrilling. And I liked being this thing they couldn't actually fight against. Like, I controlled the hordes of enemies. You tell them where to go, what to attack, and what special moves to use. So, you know, it was kind of like let's say StarCraft again. Like, I had my guys in wait, and when they came around a corner, like, I'd rush them. I'd bum rush them and start throwing up gates so they could only go one way unless they bust through the gates. And it was really cool.
Nice.
It was a lot more in-depth than I thought it would be. But it's also a lot more simpler to learn how to play than I thought. Like, I literally learned it in 60 seconds. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was cool. Really fun, and I do honestly, I don't know how the main game is. They said you can play it single player, but then there will still be four people with you at all times. Like, the other three are going to be AI. So it's like, you're always going to have people with you. And you can choose who they are, and each character has their own quests and, like, story and origin. So they're not just characters thrown at you. You're going to learn all about them.
Cool.
So,
cool.
As far as I can tell, Fable Legends has just, like, a hub, like, a main city. And then from there, you go out and do different quests. And some of them are really, really epic, you know, could take, like, 2 hours. And some are just, like, side quests you can do.
Cool.
But overall, the game looks really fun so far. I hope it's not a letdown. The villain aspect is not a letdown so far.
Is there do you feel like there's replayability in that game?
Well, I asked him about that. He said there's a lot of leveling and customizing and armor and weapons. So your guys will look different. You know, like other Fable games, you put tattoos and different armor that do different things. And he said there's a lot of levels and skills you can customize. So when I asked him about the villain, he said there definitely will be, but I can't comment on that right now. You'll just have to see. I don't know what that means. I mean, he either knows or he doesn't. So I don't know, this disembodied villain you play as will have some sort of experience gaining thing, because you need a reason to play it, not just for the enjoyment of killing other people, which I guess you could, but you will also gain some sort of levels and status by being a good villain.
Yep.
So I don't know what that is yet, though. They haven't told me, but yeah. It's interesting. I don't have an Xbox One.
I have to
point that out. I don't have an Xbox
One. There's slowly but surely more reasons to consider it.
Oh, yeah, they're catching up in my eyes with PS4, and there's actually some games I really want to play, but I can't now because they're fucking exclusives. And, it's pissing me off.
Speaking of PS4, we saw Metal Gear 5, Phantom Pain. We watched a very lengthy demonstration, like a half an hour video.
Of actual gameplay, not a scripted video.
Yeah.
And the first thing what he showed us besides the cutscene was the horse pooping.
Yeah.
That sold me. You said, yes, your horse will just poop randomly.
I mean, good.
I wonder if it will alert enemies.
That makes me wonder, okay, my horse poops. Do I have to feed it?
You're just like, oh man, get off your horse, feed it oats, damn it.
Oh, it's Harvest Moon. All of a sudden it's Nahl's sake, or Big Boss Harvest Moon, but
but there's some things you probably already know about the game. It's 200 times bigger than Ground Zeroes, which is pretty big.
Well, hey man, I mean I feel like we gotta kind of back up to begin with, because I was watching this demo, it was gorgeous, there was all these abilities, it seemed really cool, and I was like, the last game that I interacted with is Metal Gear 4. I feel so left out.
Did you play Metal Gear 4?
I watched you play Metal Gear 4. And it was, I don't know, they were referencing the PSP game that I heard was really good.
Well, Peace Walker took place, I think, before this one.
Peace Walker and then the previous installment of Metal Gear 5, and I'm just like, I don't know what's happening anymore. I don't know how... I'm not sure if I can relate to the series
anymore.
To
be fair, I don't know, because Ground Zeroes, you really do need to play Ground Zeroes in order to catch up why Big Boss is so fucked up. For a little bit.
Well, I don't even know when it is. Big Boss is the genetic father of...
But Ocelot's in it, and he's young.
Yeah.
It does take place in the past.
And the technology is still kind of... It's beyond some of the stuff that was in Metal Gear Solid.
Because they're in Soviet-occupied Afghanistan.
I believe it takes place before the very first NES game, which was the Outer Haven, because he was still building that base up, I think, in Peace Walker.
But yet he has a handheld device called an iDroid that projects...
That's an iDroid and an Android.
Projections. I don't know.
That was weird.
Metal Gear has always walked the line between, like serious tactical stuff and comedy, but then this ability they were using constantly throughout the game.
The Fulton system.
Yeah, was attaching a weather balloon to... people, animals, and objects, and inexplicably sending them back to your home base, which you customize and build, which is a very cool feature.
It was hilarious.
But every time a guy sends up, even like it's like, I'm sorry, I'm attached to a balloon.
They don't actually say that.
They do scream every time. And I'm thinking, this is a tactical espionage game. I've just sent someone up into the air. They have screamed by default. And no one fucking noticed, and it took me out of it every single
time. I completely agree with that, and they're still using the cardboard box novelty to...
I love that. Oh my god, did you see
the same thing? Skirt between seriousness and this weird tongue-in-cheek.
But
I can take the cardboard box, because it doesn't make noise.
They've done that since the first game, though. They've always had these little funny things that are just like, okay, come on.
But this time they've actually broken the tactical... aspect of it. It shatters the illusion.
It's just a way to collect objects and explain it. There's no other way.
The weird thing to me about Metal Gear is that, and keeping in mind that I haven't played one since Metal Gear Solid 1,
okay,
is that with the weird sort of like technology timeline thing that I can't figure out and the very complex relationships between everyone, this series doesn't seem to want to attract new fans. Mm. Like, I felt the game looks awesome, but it's like I feel so lost by the story. Like, I couldn't even, and I tried like afterward catching up a little bit on
just read the wiki.
And I was fucking lost.
It's the most complicated wiki.
Like, I feel like while I could play the game and enjoy the hell out of the gameplay because it looks like they've done some really cool things in this game, I feel like the story would be completely lost on me. Like, completely. That there's no chance for me to catch up unless I wanted to start over. Sure. And play.
You could just play it and be like, just go through the story and see what happens. You know?
Or you could play Witcher and get involved in the story.
You know? Or yeah.
It looks really cool.
Let me put something into perspective about that Fulton system. It's like, basically, he tranquilized some people, he sent them up in the air. He tranquilized a goat for fun, sent them up in the air. He did it to a Jeep, and you're like, a Jeep? And then, you know, he went to his base, which this is one of my favorite parts, though, is he went to, you have a home base, which is like these massive rigs you built out, like in the ocean somewhere. And all those things you've sent up after a certain time has passed will be there. So, like, you see the goat on your rig walking around, and those guys have you've made them somehow join your army. And you have that.
Yeah, that was weird, too.
Yeah, but that's,
like,
yeah, that's how it was in the other game.
Although that
weird.
Was really cool, because what
and
you
that
did
Jeep was...
And was
there now.
As when you collected one of the opposing enemy forces and sent them up in the weather balloon, they then became part of your army, which you could then assign to certain aspects of research and development
team.
You could use it for intelligence reporting. You could use it for military strikes. Like, there were certain things that you could put each person that you collected. And sent back to the base, you could put them into certain categories to work in,
yeah.
I guess. Like, certain areas to work in, and that would help you out in the
game. They're definitely doing a great job adding to the stealth action game in an
by
open world.
By having a base building, customizing.
But also, like, yeah, in an open world in which it becomes more difficult. I mean, certainly, like, in Arkham Asylum, I always felt like a badass, because it was almost like you approach a stealth portion as, like, a level. It was this contained area. And then Arkham City, sometimes I just felt like an idiot. Because it's just much more difficult in an open world environment. And this game adds elements to make it not easier, but just unique new things. Like you know, the recon from afar. And I got to imagine with the army you're building, that later on you could probably call in your army to do strikes themselves.
Yeah.
I would not be shocked if you could, a diversion tactic, have them attack one part of the base and you sneak into the back. It looks really cool.
And they said everyone's base will be different because you can customize it and add shooting ranges and training things. And the thing I loved about it is that your base was really interactive. You built several layers, and like, if your guys are training, you can walk down there and like oversee it personally, and they'll get better at their like job if you help them with it.
That's why I feel like they're almost like humanizing the soldiers you capture. Because
you're the boss.
And
yeah.
I feel like you can like utilize them in the field. I think they're going to do some really cool things with that.
Yeah, it was one of the most interesting things that, one of the most interesting thing that I felt was when he approached the area that he was looking to get the intelligence on. He would scan the whole, he would scan the base with his binoculars and then mark the enemies in a certain way so that they would stay up on the heads-up display.
Where was this technology in, like, Metal Gear, like, every other game?
I don't know, but they would constantly stay marked, and then you could also put
waypoints
as to where you needed to go or where, since they were on a higher elevation, you could see, like, this would be a great place to hide. This is a great place to hide.
And then
here to here to here.
And then he used intelligence from his base to mark areas that may have enemies he hasn't seen yet. There was literally 20 things marked before he went into this base and slaughtered everyone.
Yeah, it's true. And then he called in the cardboard box that dropped in, and then, you know.
He did that for a minute, but there was cool moves. You could jump out of the side now so no one could see you.
Yeah, he had an e-cigarette.
Oh yeah,
an
e-cigar.
E-cigar in Soviet Afghanistan. Yeah.
did not release vapor, but actually a holographic projection of smoke that glitched out occasionally.
That's one of those things where it's just they added a wacky, funny thing. Because if you remember the loading screen from Metal Gear 4,
I know.
It was just him smoking, and that was it for like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
I mean, it's funny.
And the reason for that is that they can use that to pass the time.
So you could change day and night.
He smokes, and then he changes it. You can watch the map to, if you have marked the enemies, you can then, and you go into this mode where time is passing, you can watch that map and see where the enemies go, what their routes are.
But how cool is that?
And then also the fact that the enemies also go to sleep. They have shifts. Yeah. Like, it's not just
and the guards. The weather changes exactly. Constantly.
Yeah, the guards aren't just constantly moving back and forth between a pre-established route. There is an economy, and there's a social aspect of the guards inside the base. Yeah. That they
just
are
in the base, regardless of what else is going on.
Right,
in the world.
Exactly. And there's some sort of ecosystem inside the base that they sleep and then they go and take this job. They tag somebody out and then move, and then that guy takes a break. And it's really interesting.
Besides that, though, the thing I did like about that whole e-cigar thing, passing the time, is in every other game where you have a gimmick to pass the time. Even if they show things moving, like the sun really fast, you can't look around and do things while it's happening.
Right.
And this, he was standing there, and they were, like, moving the camera and watching all the blades of grass move, and the sun and the shadows constantly moving. And you could see all the soldiers moving around. You could look at your GPS map and watch everything change while the time was speeding by.
Yep.
I'm just like, can you just keep that on for, like, ever?
No, it's going to be it's an incredible game with a lot of really new ideas.
Yeah. So the first part of Metal Gear Solid 5 came out how long ago?
Recently.
Like
a couple months?
The amount of stuff in this one just seems like a lot more than the previous one. Like, the previous was just like just scratched the surface.
Well, this is the first one that's open world. Well, the Ground Zeroes was a prequel. It's tiny. It's a small game.
But it was an open world small game, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was small.
It's just interesting how much more made it into this.
They said this one was 200 times bigger than that.
Yeah, 200 times. Was it always meant to be?
They're
gonna release a small portion to tease people?
No. My understanding of it is that they wanted it was going to be one game, and they said, "Oh, we want to tell this story. We don't want to not tell this story. Let's finish this larger aspect of the game and have basically a prelude."
Gotcha. Interesting.
So it's like chapter one. So it's like the boat before you get to the island, you know, like Metal Gear Solid.
And man, I don't know, I think it's really neat. There's lots of cool concepts, but I also feel like there's maybe too many concepts, too many weird conflicting concepts.
Yeah, but that prosthetic arm. You can knock
it
anywhere.
Cool.
It just his hand spins around and makes a knocking noise, so you can do it anywhere.
There's many cool aspects of it. There's just so many different things happening at once. I'm wondering. I mean, obviously, it'll still be a good game. Kojima doesn't make bad games, but it was very odd, very very odd. The different aspects of it all working together. It didn't necessarily feel harmonious. If that means anything.
Well, yeah, and that's how I feel about the story versus the gameplay. Is the story is so alienating to those who don't know it going in, that it doesn't sync up with like all the like, yeah, it's almost like if it wasn't Metal Gear Solid and they just had those features, it would be a more harmonious thing that I'd want to jump into. But because it has all these Metal Gear-ish things, including the story, I'm not going to. It's weird.
I really respect Kojima. I think he's one of the best military fiction authors of this generation, but I having fallen like just like a handful of games behind, I don't know. Anyway, we should move on to something else.
Well, we found some hidden gems.
Yes.
While walking around.
And not just the diamonds in Soviet Afghanistan.
Yeah, that are just lying there in the dirt.
Right? Yeah, Snake also just found diamonds under a tree and was like, you can collect these. And they're like massive, like the biggest, like you get $1 million for these diamonds. Anyway, we found a game called Apotheon, if I'm pronouncing it right. Not a Pantheon, but Apotheon.
Yeah.
Which, wait, you played these like, were they Greek or Romans? I don't know.
It was Greek. I believe it was Greek. It was the stylized as though it were a Grecian urn. Basically, you're playing ancient Grecian art, two-dimensional art figurines, side-scrolling, perfectly matches the style of the pottery and murals and mosaics of the time. Really, really spectacular. They were only showing off the
multiplayer.
Currently. They do have a single player campaign.
It wasn't
though.
Ready. It's something to do about the gods and stealing their powers, which sounds great.
It's one of the many indie games that are coming to PlayStation because Sony has been really supportive of the indie market.
What else did we find?
Oh man, Earth Knight.
Yeah, that thing that was hard to read because of that font. But man, that game looked amazing. It's made by that one I know, Cleaversoft.
Yep.
So it's this completely 100% hand-painted game. It's taken them 2.5 years just for the guy who does all of the artwork himself, and they're not done yet. They said maybe sometime next year. Beautiful game. I'm not really sure how to, like, describe it. It comes out for, I think, PS4 first, if I'm correct, and then it comes out for everything else later.
Just describe what happens. What do you do in the game?
Dude, I don't know. I was an old man falling out of, like, a satellite towards the Earth, all hand-painted, all fluid animations. You land on a dragon, and then basically...
A Chinese-style dragon.
Yeah, Chinese-style dragon. There's really only, like, two moves, which is, like, jump and land. And you're dodging these horrible monsters while trying to collect power-ups and swords and speed. And you get to the end of the dragon's head when you if you make it there and you stab him. And, like, each world has, like, a dozen dragons. Did you see how many dragons were in it?
And, so many dragons!
And you can just go and fall and dodge them and go to the next world. And the next world has so many dragons. There's 8 worlds. There's a hidden 9th one, they said. And literally there's, like, hundreds of dragons... Hundreds of levels, it looked like.
Yeah.
And, like, it was every layer, every level is, like, you're getting closer and closer to the Earth.
This sounds really hard to explain in this podcast.
It really is.
We are doing a video. We're doing a video with them, so you'll see this. It'll hopefully make a little bit more sense.
It'll make more sense than what I'm trying to say.
But there's kind of... There's an element of... Tiny Wings, and that when you were on the dragon,
I don't know. It was a constantly
moving, undulating dragon that was creating these hills and peaks and valleys that you could use to when you jumped up, you could land and using the force of the landing to then push yourself back up based on where you were on that hill, peak, or valley. So you're using gravity to hop back up into the air or land harder depending on where you were on the slide.
Oh, weird.
On the downward slope of the dragon.
And I literally skipped the first level and, like, after the first dragon and hovered down to the second and I got my ass whooped. Literally, like, in a minute. And that was only the second world out of, like, 8. So.
But yeah, no, check out the video. It'll best describe what Earth Light. Earth Knight.
Earth Knight.
Earth Knight.
Yeah, check out Earth Knight for yourself. And you'll see some pretty amazing shit in that game. We have breaking news.
Yeah, we do have breaking news. Via Twitter, Matt, you want to break this news for us?
Yeah, Pac-Man will be joining the Smash Brothers roster.
What?
Yeah.
Is that good or
Nintendo
bad?
America apparently...
Isn't,
like,
that Capcom?
It's Namco.
Namco?
Yeah, apparently they announced that at an unstreamed developer roundtable tonight. And then there's also rumors that Game & Watch is returning, but that hasn't been confirmed
yet.
What
the fuck?
Where's Ness, first of all? But then also, Pac-Man now...
Wait, what are the responses that said, Nintendo of America, fuck off?
Well, the top comment on Twitter was, fuck off.
In all caps. At Nintendo of America, fuck off.
And like, so they're not releasing... They didn't release that to the public. They didn't do it to, like, the media. They did it to a small table.
I don't fucking understand. Like, what are they doing?
They're spreading out information across a wide scope of... It's like...
And not a single person has all the info. So nobody really knows.
Collecting all the information Nintendo's releasing is a full-time job.
Like, God.
They also announced, inexplicably, announced Palutena as a playable character, the goddess.
She seems cool as hell.
Yeah, she seems cool, the goddess from Kid Icarus.
And also they showed Dark
Knees are banned from online play.
What?
No Blowjobula in online.
Wait, but that they were stressing the whole importance of now you can play your me.
Yeah, but that's...
But locally.
Locally.
Oh, who the fuck? The whole point of that game is to play online if you're at home by yourself. I mean... Especially if they take out, like,
my best
single
Smash
player.
Brothers memories are all with friends on a couch.
Okay, you know why they did that? You know why they banned Miis?
Because of Blowjobula.
Yeah, specifically. Like, they did it because they're...
Your fault!
Yeah,
we didn't even design Blowjobula.
No, we didn't.
We got it from
Miiverse. And it's so stupid that they're so fucking scared of people being offended of having, like, a penis on someone's face, which really doesn't look that much like a penis unless you squint. It actually does. But, like, they banned everyone from using their customized, like, Wiis that you could make just because they were scared of someone getting offended. That's it. They're fucking bullshit. That, you know, fuck Nintendo.
I don't know. I think that's a valid move.
No, it isn't.
No one else
does that.
Because if you put an age rating on a game, it needs to stay that way.
Did they
put
an age rating?
You know what? Cap is the Nintendo apologist.
I don't want to be, but I feel like that's a reasonable thing to say.
It's not reasonable to ban all Miis because they think someone's going to be offended.
If you think I'm blowing them too hard, I don't know, leave a comment or whatever, but I think I'm being fair.
I mean, okay, Disney's letting you create worlds
and they're censoring the penises because you submit worlds to them, yes, and then they authorize
but
them.
But they're not going to ban everyone from making worlds. Because they have a system
Nintendo that in order for this to keep fair, they should have a Mii approval process.
Yes. Like, you upload your Mii, they look, oh, it's okay. And then that one's now saved that you can use whenever you want online. It's linked to your name anyway.
Well, aside from creating more American jobs, I don't really... That seems like a really unnecessary step that I cannot...
Well, that's not actually a Nintendo of America decision. It's the company worldwide decision, is it not?
Who the fuck knows?
Yeah, you know what? I don't fucking know. All right, well, let's move on to something more exciting. Telltale Games.
Yeah, Telltale.
Woo!
We saw Tales from the Borderlands. We watched the first half hour of the first campaign. It was some stuff that was similar from Wolf Among Us and Walking Dead, and it was some stuff that was kind of different, and a lot of it was from Borderlands.
Done. if you're familiar with Borderlands, it has really wacky, crazy, like, fight scenes and chaos and blood and gore in like a comedic way, and this has everything that embodies Borderlands with, actually, I think, a more intense story than Borderlands has ever had. Now, we only saw the first 30 minutes.
That's the point.
Exactly. Well, exactly. And like, people love that game. People like the lore of it, and there's so much detail, and they even discuss this. Like, the world's massive, and it has a history of their own that they can make so much, like, they could make so many stories out of it. And so, like, we watched the first 30 minutes, and I thought it was hilarious and funny, and some of the decisions were really great that you could make.
Now, what did you guys feel about from that first demo that we saw?
Some of it was really good. Some of it was like, meh, but they did say it was a work in progress.
Well, yeah, but the story is pretty much set in stone. I mean, like, what you saw in terms of the textures and all that kind of stuff is relatively changeable, but in terms of what you saw that
story-wise,
game,
I loved it.
Story-wise and what was performed and all that kind of stuff, how did you feel about when you were watching?
There were two parts to it. There's three parts. I don't know, it's weird. It starts off and you're like, let's say present day, and then you get in a situation where this character needs to tell his story. Here's how things went down when I did that thing a year ago. And they said that it's kind of like about, it's a story game about storytelling, so your version of the events, even though you're playing through them, won't necessarily be true, and they actually know the version that's accurate, which will factor in later chapters.
So you're actually going to see probably three different stories of the same thing at some point.
Yeah, and it started, honestly, it started kind of slow, and I thought the comedic timing was a bit off.
Yeah.
But at the second act, when your characters get involved in this action scenario where you deploy a big-ass robot... Against bandits, choose what features it has. From there on, the comedy was sharper, the action was sharper, everything was just better from that point
onwards. The interactive combat was really, I thought, neat. Basically, how, like, you're targeting enemies and stuff. And I don't know if it's set in stone
like
you can do.
Like a normal person, not like a Borderlands hero, you stumble into the action. And you just kind of, like, haplessly get out of these dangerous scenarios.
Well, I guess we should say the main character, well, one of the two main characters, is literally this suited douchebag from Hyperion who wants to take over. And, like, he doesn't know anything about fighting
or
anything about the planet.
Borderlands fans, this is super important because this game takes place immediately after Borderlands 2. You know, if you want the next part of the story, this could be it. You know, this could affect it. We don't know.
It's, as they mentioned, it's not the dark, you know, drama that the Wolf Among Us and Walking Dead have been. So it was a little jarring to see, you know, Telltale's take on this because they've done a few tongue-in-cheek humorous things before in those past two games. But we haven't seen them go all out as far as, like, you know, action comedy. It's cool that I was aware that it's a Borderlands game. It has many interfaces.
The comedy was very Borderlands-ish.
In their games in the style of the Walking Dead games. Because they have had funny games.
Yeah, true. That is absolutely true. It feels that it's aware of itself as a Telltale game, too. I noticed, like, specifically the line, there was, Greaseface will remember that.
Yeah.
It was just very, like, upfront about, like, the dude that you just insulted as having a greasy face, which was an option of, you know, one of the dialogue options that the
Yeah, there's no reason you would have had to have known him as that unless you'd insulted him. And that
they actually labeled him as Greaseface later when it came up.
And then, like, and he gives this dirty look, like, yeah, I'm gonna fucking remember that you called me Greaseface. And it's very aware that
he does of the
choice aspect. And I do think the choices are gonna be more, like, in some weird ways, more important and more dramatic than the more recent dramatic Telltale games because of the nature of it, of that it's a story about storytelling. You know, it looks like things can wildly go different depending on the how you want to tell the tale.
Right, because at the very end when they switch to the other main character of the story, she didn't just say, you know, her version of a similar event. She picked one of four options for what literally happened next in the story. All of them seemingly wildly different.
So you play this other character as well. So you play both these characters who have conflicting stories about events, and you're telling them literally what the event is going to be.
Which hasn't happened in Walking
Dead. And I don't know what it leads to, and they said it's going to be 5 episodes long, at least for right now. I don't know if they'll make, you know, a second season or whatever, which would be great if it does well. It's not on next gen yet. So, whatever, but they said it's coming to Vita, PC, Mac, Steam, PS3, and 360.
The whole shebang, except for the new ones.
Do you think next year we'll be able to just say current gen for the systems that everyone's buying, and current gen and past gen?
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, but next year we'll get another year.
They did say that there's plans to bring it to
PS4. They said it's coming, but they don't have a definitive date yet, but they told us all the ones it is definitely coming out.
Personally, for this one, I will wait on this one.
It was so funny.
To see how you guys feel about it.
I'm like sold walking on Telltale,
I love Telltale. Like, I would totally buy it. However, I'm not a huge Borderlands fan.
Well, that's the thing, is I like Borderlands, but I wasn't a huge fan
and
of
so I
everything
wanna,
else.
I want to wait to see how that all turn out. However, like Wolf Among Us, I was immediately like, yep. Walking Dead, I was like, yep.
Yeah,
I knew nothing
about Fables and Wolf Among Us, and I don't regret the decision to do that. I mean, obviously, I'm so anti pre-order ordering and everything else now, especially in this industry where we tend to vote more often than we should with our dollar on games that don't deserve our money. But, like, you know, so it's probably a good idea to wait to find out if this game gets well received. But from what I saw, I do think it's going to end up being a well received game.
I mean,
if the rest of the game is like that first 30 minutes, then I'm sold on it.
Well, yeah. and actually for me, if the rest of the game turns out to be like that first 30 minutes, I would not buy it.
What?
Which is interesting because
that's
the beginning.
Not interesting.
To me, it was not until it got to the combat. It was not interesting to me. I wasn't interested in the characters. For me, Wolf Among Us, I was immediately interested in Bigby. I was immediately interested in what Lee's problem was. Yeah. Like, in the beginning of this, and both of those games also had a very interesting and exciting incident at the very beginning of the game.
Here's the difference.
Whereas this one did not have anything. It started with a...
It was an extremely slow start.
Well, here's the thing. I agree with you that, and here's why, though. Like, The Walking Dead was a standalone story. It started right at the beginning.
Right.
The Wolf Among Us, was it a standalone story, or did it...
Yeah.
Yeah, and it started right at the beginning. But the Tales from Borderlands, if you play the second game and finish it, this starts right after the second game. So you'll know what's going on.
Sure.
When you see this, you'll be like, oh my god, I'm in Hyperion.
Which
oh my god,
makes
I've seen
it
this.
Less penetrable for Colin and I, who have not
exactly.
played Borderlands.
Exactly, so I see what you're saying, but like, if I play Borderlands 2, I'm immediately like, grabbed at the beginning.
I think there's also key elements that we don't know about with this game yet, such as there is a loot system. They're not dropping the Borderlands loot aspect. There's, you know, specifically, you are racking up cash during the game.
For
which
some
is
unknown.
Something that has not happened
yet. Yeah, they have not, yeah, they haven't gone over
Commerce.
It. They
none of it.
It yet,
maybe,
so.
Maybe you buy guns and actually like get better.
I mean,
that's a huge part of Borderlands is the weapons
and customization.
Yeah,
you know, maybe you start customizing your person. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how you utilize that, or simply maybe if you don't loot enough, you won't be able to buy items that end up impacting the story. So
right.
Your story will diverge simply by not.
Being
having
able to afford it,
which is a new way of storytelling.
Yeah.
Also,
the gameplay, like that aspect of it, is very appealing. It's just there's no hook for me yet. Aside from that,
well, I guess the other thing too is the max these games have ever been price marked is $25. I think $25 for the 14 hours of entertainment is like, it's difficult to even just like, even if this one ends up being, probably will not be as good as the two seasons of Walking Dead or Wolf Among Us. However, I do think that even at that price point, it's good. But also, these are always on sale.
Considering the fact that we're paying, like, well, I'm not, but considering the fact most people are paying $60 for things that are not even finished.
Like, or 8 hours long.
Or broken, or whatever it is, and yet this thing is, you know, $25 or whatever it is.
It's usually
I see your point.
Yeah, it's usually easy to get the first episode for free, because there's always those sales. And then, like, I've seen ones where all the other episodes are $2.50 a piece. If you can get the entire 5 episodes for $10, it's hard to argue.
And they always have bundles where, like, buy all of them right now on sale in one package for like $30. Yeah.
And I want to so maybe I will just because I want to support Telltale, because I really believe in what they're doing, and I think that what they're doing is incredible gaming that people don't do as well as they do.
Interactive storytelling.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is like, I'm all on board for them making that a viable thing for even other companies to pick up. But you know, if Tales from the Borderlands doesn't once again, shouldn't put the onus on us as a consumer, but if Tales from the Borderlands is well received but people don't purchase it because they're afraid to jump into a different type of story or different type, you know, whatever, they may not look into other weird IPs that might have stories.
They might
want to
play it safe and go, well, let's go with the ones we know work.
Like,
and
you know, just Game of Thrones or just Walking Dead. And it's like, no, like, I mean, obviously I knew nothing about Fables. Now I want to know everything about Fables. You know, if the Borderlands game
so,
ends
yeah,
up
if you
being
play
really
Borderlands
good.
And then you're like, wow, this is really, it ends up being really amazing, you like it, you're like, well, now maybe I want to try out the games, you know?
Yeah.
So it's that way.
Mm-hmm.
So
the last but not least.
Yeah, we head over to across the street to the Hooters parking lot where Devolver, the game distributor, had set up a bunch of trailers. And each of them had these great games that they're distributing, many of which are going to make a splash on PlayStation 4, who are supporting all of them.
I love how you make no qualms, like no qualms that you are a Sony fanboy.
Whatever, I have it, and I like everything I've bought for it. They're the only ones who have announced software, hardware, and games all at the same time, so...
So we didn't have a chance to check out everything they had there. We did check out one thing this evening. We hope to check out more because they also have Hotline Miami 2, which I'm very excited about. We check out Broforce.
Oh, man. And we have an interview.
The most American thing to come out of South Africa.
We have an interview and some gameplay footage. But essentially, well, what you'll take for this is we asked, why did you make Broforce? And they said, because freedom.
It's true.
I don't know if you heard that. Brandon did punctuate that statement with a fart.
They couldn't hear that. Thank you for mentioning
it. I've got the headphones on. I'm pretty sure it was audible.
So Broforce has been out already. It's been out for PC. It's coming to...
and you should. And if you're not planning on buying this on PS4, you should buy it right now.
It is...
I want to buy it right now.
Imagine Terraria injected with the adrenaline sampled from every 1980s action star ever. I mean, talking about, like, all the raw testosterone and pumping biceps of Chuck Norris, Arnold Schwarzenegger, everybody, even all the way
RoboCop
to like Kay from Men in Black and Indiana Jones, have a pixelated bro representation in this game.
These are not
each
the
with
characters.
Unique features.
Yeah. Yeah. Loosely based.
It was Indiana Brones.
Yeah,
Indiana Brones. Which I have to mention, every character has a unique, like, they have a unique set of, like, regular attack, knife, or whatever, special attack. So Indiana Jones uses whip, and he can whip onto objects, which no other character can do. And his special attack was he just fires one shot. That's it. His special attack, and it's, like, really devastating. It's all like,
it goes through people.
Yeah.
And it's a very highly stylized game. Yeah. I don't really know what to call it.
Bronan the Barbarian.
Oh, man, that was such a good character.
It's kind of, there's, like, a little bit of Contra in it. Like, there's just, like, bullets everywhere.
Explosions, grenades, turkeys with bombs
in
them.
But then your pixelated action heroes are, like, decimating the landscape, burrowing through mountains and
Rambro,
saving hostages. Now we were playing as four players, so it was
chaotic.
Mayhem. We were dying all over the place,
and it has a co-op online, or you know, in your room, in the room.
That's
on
right.
your couch.
But it was the reason why people were dying so often is because there was so much insanity happening on the screen.
I didn't know what was an enemy.
You had
or
no
not.
Idea what yeah. was like. It was like, oh, I'm stepping out of mine. Oh, fuck. And then
yeah, but
people
it was
were just constantly
like,
dying.
It didn't deter me. It was so fun. I didn't want to stop playing, honestly.
Yeah, it was hard to stop. It was fast. It was fun. It's super cool. I mean, it's hilarious. If you ever listen to the Blood Brothers mixtapes, if you like watching cheesy 80s movies, if you think The Expendables is at least a good idea. I'm not saying good
you know
film,
what?
But at
you
least
know
a
what?
Good
Wait,
idea.
Wait, that is a perfect description. It is The Expendables...
Times a million.
Times a million video game.
Yeah.
That's literally it. It's an Expendables video game.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
Broforce looked and played... It was so fun.
And the developers were really cool.
Yeah.
So, which you should watch the video and some of the gameplay footage.
High fives that almost broke our hands.
Yeah. And I hope I broke their hands for freedom. So that concludes everything we've seen in one day.
That's day one. Oh, man, day two. Stay tuned, everyone.
We're just going to go home. There's nothing left. We're just kidding. We're kidding. There's a lot.
No, there's a lot of stuff
so
on our
much
list.
More.
We're meeting with all but, sorts of. We're meeting with people tomorrow.
Yeah, Bethesda, Namco Bandai,
and Dreams, a bunch of people.
We're gonna check out the
Alien
game.
Isolation.
Yeah,
if we can get into it, Oculus is doing an Alien Isolation thing with their headset.
Yeah, we're hoping to sample some VR. See if that's a fad or if it's like the future of gaming. You know, that's a big question.
It's never been the future of gaming. Well, VR boy.
You mean Virtual Boy?
It's VR Boy!
Whatever, man.
VR Boy.
So, hey, Nerdy Show's listener supported. If you enjoyed this E3 coverage, please throw some coin our way, even a dollar. We'll say, hey, not only are you cool enough sending us a dollar, that's awesome, we'll give you a shout-out. We'll actually send you years worth of bonus content, deleted scenes, outtakes, all kinds of stuff, art, sound, everything. The whole works, just a dollar. If you like what we do, if you enjoyed listening to this, please support the show, the network. We're a whole network of podcasts. And this month we've got the Dungeons and Doritos support drive. That means if you contribute to us any dollar amount, you get to the opportunity to support or create your own campaign for us to play in our tabletop role-playing show, Dungeons and Doritos. Our fates are in your hands. And there's some amazing stretch goals. Of course, we need $300 minimum every month to keep the network running. But if we hit $600, we're going to release a script-to-page breakdown of early scenes from our second issue of our D&D comic. 815 minutes of State of the Empire outtakes, where we look for news in Alderaan places. And 1,000, a digital copy of our 8-page preview from that issue 2 of D&D. And finally, the coup de grace. $1,200, we will record an out-of-continuity What If D&D episode in the style of all the great Marvel What Ifs, where the community will help us decide on some kind of random-ass weird story to tell, set in the world of Doritodonia with our beloved characters, doing stuff that is not right and unwholesome.
Yeah, I mean, so in theory, you could get 2 episodes commissioned for D&D this month.
Yeah,
however,
in one blow.
In one
yes.
blow. However... That being said, the previous commission D&D support drive ended up being... It's going to be cut into 2 episodes. So you might even get 3 episodes commissioned from just 1 month of support.
Have fun with that.
So, hey, what are you going to do?
Hey, Colin, are we getting a D&D this month?
I hope so. If E3 doesn't kill me, you will get a D&D this month.
We got to give a shout-out to Mauron, who contributed and said... He said, hoping this is a 3D month, Dungeons, Doritos, and Derp. Woo!
He's my number one son.
Every month is a 3D month.
Number one son.
Well, every other month is a 3D month. Because Dungeons and
Doritos... I live in the third dimension. Every second's a 3D.
Well. Anyway, so as Colin said, the plan is to cap off this Dungeons and Doritos support drive month with a new episode of Dungeons and Doritos.
That's the plan.
Yep, that's the plan. And then we'll be following that up shortly with Call of Cthulhu, the first episode of that miniseries.
Yes, we were going to release it last month. I know that you guys, we talked about having something every month. You were going to have some sort of role-playing podcast. However, the reason that we don't have Call of Cthulhu last month is that it is so cool, and we're doing something that is so cool, we could not rush it to make it release last month.
Yeah, we really didn't want to. The score that's being composed for this and the other stuff that we're doing is great, so... stay tuned for all that, and thanks so much for listening. If you have something you want us to check out at E3, we surely will. We know Max Acrees wants us to find out about Sunset Overdrive. We do too. That is on our to-do list. So if you've got something you want us to check out, post this episode's comments, hit us up on the forums. If you disagree with something we've said, let us know.
Just don't be dicks about it. We understand it's our opinion, and you need to understand that.
This is an open discussion, guys. This is an open discussion. Thanks so much for listening. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Brandon.
Bye, I'm Colin.
Bye, I'm Matt.
See you tomorrow.
Let's get some sleep.
Oh, boy.
Not really.
Because we're going to be awake editing videos.
Yay, videos.
Oh, hey, you made it to the end of the episode. Well, I've got some sexy secret things to tell you. Not really too secret. I do say them at the end of every episode. But if you liked what you heard, it is imperative that you follow my every word. First, I want to thank you for listening to Nerdy Show. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows in the Nerdy Show network alive by telling a friend, rating and reviewing us on iTunes, shopping at nerdyshow.com/store, or, most importantly, by directly donating to the network. Any size contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show outtakes, dramatic readings, images, and other crazy stuff, and lets you participate in our monthly support drives. Just go to nerdyshow.com/support to chip in. But if you really want to level up, find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming. Just visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, as well as other fine programs, community forums, videos, articles, and more, head over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show podcasts via the iTunes Store, and for the latest news, follow us on all your favorite social networks. So to recap, tell a friend, donate to the show, and connect with the entire Nerdy Show Network crew online. We're glad to be your home for authentic nerdy entertainment.